Support for IPR and this podcast comes from Gravitate Coworking, a workplace community of remote workers, freelancers, and entrepreneurs. Gravitate provides all the space and amenities necessary so you can focus on your work, creativity, and growth. With locations in Des Moines and Valley Junction, learn more at gravitatecoworking.com/IPR.
I was elected the majority leader.
This amendment broadens the scope of the bill.
What will this bill do to turn that around?
During the legislative session, Iowa Public Radio produces a weekly podcast.
We just want to make sure that it is something that is sustainable.
These are proven programs that work.
From committees to chambers, follow the path of bills and policies.
This bill lays out transparency in the process.
How can you say that with confidence?
The podcast Under the Golden Dome returns in January. Subscribe now for the 2019 legislative session.
And we're back with more of River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. So good to have so many questions from our listeners in the last half hour for U.S. Representative Cindy Axne, the first time as an office holder on this program last half hour. I wanted to remind you that this Thursday, Abby Finkenauer will be on this program of Iowa's 1st District. She will not be on live. Her schedule prevents that. So if you'd like to volley a question for Abby Finkenauer, especially if you're in the 1st District, email us, rivertoriver@iowapublicradio.org. Another reminder, State of the Union live coverage tonight on Iowa Public Radio stations, or you can listen to audio streaming at iowapublicradio.org. This half hour, we want to focus on mental health courts. Now, mental health courts link offenders who would ordinarily be bound for prison to long-term community-based treatment, and they have been created in numerous jurisdictions across the United States, largely a response to the increasing number of defendants with serious mental health conditions, and then they're caught up in the criminal justice system. Well, a pilot program for a mental health court in Story County is now underway. This second half hour, we want to talk with two women who are involved in that effort. Monique Beenken is Associate Professor of Sociology at Iowa State University, and Latifa Faisal is a Story County Mental Health Court Coordinator. Monique and Latifa, welcome to the program.
Thank you. Thank you for having us.
Thanks, Ben. Good to be here.
Monique, let me start with you. As I mentioned, a response to the increasing number of defendants with some serious mental health conditions caught up in the criminal justice system. Describe how and why that happens.
Well, one of the things that we know that explains the reason we have so many offenders in the criminal justice system with psychiatric disorder really goes back to the system of deinstitutionalization that we saw in our country that started actually in the 50s and really took hold in the 1980s, where federal funding for long-term psychiatric stay facilities was eliminated or greatly reduced, and the onus to pay for that care fell to states and communities. And once they weren't able to keep up with providing long-term stay for these individuals, we saw more and more people ending up homeless, ending up in communities that couldn't provide for their mental health needs. And what happens when you have people who have either unmet or untreated or undiagnosed mental health needs is that it increases the chances that they will, in fact, become justice involved.
Mm-hmm. So enter the mental health court. Introduce us to that idea for those of us who don't know what goes on.
So a mental health court is a specialty court model designed to adjudicate certain kinds of offenders in a therapeutic model. They are really the grandchild of what might be more commonly known to people listening with a drug court. Drug courts have been in existence for, I believe, since the 1970s, and it's an alternative adjudication model where you understand that part of the reason someone is offending is because they have an underlying unmet medical or psychiatric need. And as it applies to mental health courts, what people who operate these courts understand is that there are certain people who offend not because of offending choices, but because they have unmet mental health needs. And if you want to get this person out of the justice system, the best thing to do is to make sure that they actually are receiving the mental health treatment that they need, and that actually not only benefits the offender, but it also benefits the justice system.
Mm-hmm. So to be clear, Monique, is this in lieu of penalties or serving time?
That's a really good point. Courts are allowed to design their interventions however they wish. Some are pre-adjudication, some are post-adjudication. Regardless of which avenue the court uses, what you hope is that the offender will be able to avoid incarceration. There are a series of expectations that the offender must follow, and if they aren't able to comply with the treatment plan, sometimes incarceration is still one of the options that jurisdictions will use.
Mm-hmm. Latifa, let me turn to you as the Story County Mental Health Court Coordinator here. How did this pilot program come about?
Our current county attorney, when she came into office, two of the things that she really wanted to see happen in Story County were a mental health court and a drug court. We're starting with mental health court because mm-hmm. we have excellent community resources. We have people in the community who are excited to participate in the team. We have access to a wonderful mentor in Monique who can give us some guidance and really make sure that we're setting up our team and our court according to evidence-based practices and that we're doing everything right.
Mm-hmm. So, Latifa, where are you at this point in the process of setting up this mental health court in Story County?
So we've got our team together. We're in the process of building protocols and procedures, policies. So we're not actively accepting people into the mental health court at this time.
Do you have a judge?
We do. We do have a judge. We have a probation office who is on board with participating. Central Iowa Community Services is involved. They're already doing a lot of work in the jail, interviewing people as they come through, identifying those people who have mental health needs. Optime Life Services has jail diversion, so they're already involved with these people, making sure that they're connecting them to resources in the community. So those things are already there. Those people are already there doing that work. And mm-hmm. so this is just going to bring those people together and make sure that individuals who are identified as appropriate for this court are getting the services that they need and the supports that they need.
Monique, when this is up and running, how many people will be better served to help their serious mental health condition, avoiding perhaps, you know, a jail sentence or some kind of penalty that really doesn't address the root of the problem?
So that's a really great question and something that has been posed to me by the working group. And what I have encouraged them to do is to scale up their program in a really conservative and thoughtful way. One of the things that you have to do when you're designing this kind of intervention is to be sure that you're not overpromising what you can provide mm-hmm. people who have serious mental health needs. And also you have to balance community safety. You want to be sure that the people who are in the court can receive the services that we know they need. And so as you're really beginning the process, you want to start slow. I would encourage 3 to 5 offenders a year. And then as the team grows in its confidence and ability to meet the needs of its particular offender population, understanding what its service provider options are, it can grow and it will, the working group will be the group that decides what the cap for that is.
If you just joined us, we're talking about a new mental health court, a pilot program in Story County. Monique Beenken, you were just listening to her voice, Associate Professor of Sociology at Iowa State University, along with Latifa Faisal, Story County Mental Health Court Coordinator. And let's talk a little bit about how this court works, because if we haven't been in court, we've seen enough portrayed on TV or in the movies. This functions a little bit differently, doesn't it, Monique? It's not an adversarial system?
That's correct. So when you watch a court show and you see a prosecutor on one side of the table and a defense attorney on the other side of the table and they're yelling and fighting, that is a traditional adversarial system. A mental health court is an alternative adjudication model that really functions on collaboration and cooperation. And whenever I work with groups, one of the things that I do is I draw a diagram. So if you think about a starburst diagram that has lines kind of jutting out from a center point, and in the center of this model is the offender. And what happens in a mental health court is you have all of the people in the justice system kind of come together to surround the offender and work together collaboratively. And so it really is a different way of adjudicating an offender in the American justice system.
That's the goal. Does it really happen that way, or do people in the system have to be persuaded? Now, think about this a little differently.
Absolutely. That's some of what is, I think, expected when you start these courts, because there are many motivations why someone would want to have a mental health court in their jurisdiction. There are many reasons that they're beneficial. And so one stakeholder might have a reason, but that might not be the other stakeholder's reason. And so if you have had an adversarial relationship for years, part of what happens when you decide to engage in this collaborative process is a period of redeveloping what could have just been a long-standing adversarial relationship. And so there is a period of time in which you do expect the people involved to just kind of get to know each other in a different way.
Mm-hmm. And in this setting, we would like them to be on the same team, but they may go off into another court, a traditional court, and they will be adversaries again.
That's exactly right, because not every court in Story County will operate in this way. And so it is in many ways asking a lot for people to work together in this one venue and then kind of be fighting in this other venue. But I think what motivates this work from all the people who agree to enter this process is an understanding that regardless of what the adversarial process calls for, that the heart of the mental health court project is doing what each party believes is in the best interest of the individual defendant. And when we keep that in mind, I think we see all parties willing to come together and collaborate in ways they might not otherwise do that.
Latifa, let me ask you to dig a little bit deeper into the plight of the mentally ill and when they get into the justice system, how they can be kind of stuck there, court fines and debt. What is something that will help us understand? Do you have an example or tell us how that works? Because it's often repeated, right?
Yeah, it is. So an example of someone who might be appropriate in mental health court would be maybe someone who is living with schizophrenia and has been charged with harassment. And then, they go through the traditional criminal justice system, they're on probation, and then they violate that probation, and then they're, for whatever reason, and then they're back on a probation revocation, and then they are charged again with harassment somewhere else, and it's because their needs are not being met. They're either not on their medication or they're not receiving services in the community. They don't have people in the community who are watching for those signs that they're needing a little bit of extra help. And so they just continue to cycle through.
So there's really no door out, is there?
Right.
Mm-hmm. Some might ask, Monique, let me pose this to you. Some crimes, a good number of offenses have victims. Do victims have a say as to whether the perpetrator, the offender, goes to this type of court?
There is no one way to handle that issue, and that's kind of what I'm working through with the court. So the beauty of these alternative interventions is that each jurisdiction is allowed to express its wishes and goals within the court. And so there's no right or wrong way to do it. And so if a jurisdiction chooses to allow the victim of an offense to have a say, that's certainly reasonable. What most courts do to address this particular issue is that they will not allow certain offenses to be considered for court participation.
Such as?
So it could be if there is a physical assault.
Mm-hmm.
And so if there is a particular victim who has been the victim of an actual assault, that offender wouldn't even be considered appropriate. So you wouldn't have to get a victim consent. Some of the, when you're just starting out a court, one of the things I do consider or that I ask jurisdictions to think about is really starting with low-level offenders. And so you really want to think about, are we talking about property offenses? Are we talking about kind of monetary offenses, things that don't actually involve violence? And if you are going to allow something where there is a potential victim, what level are we talking about? Are we talking at the misdemeanor level? Are we talking about felony level? So there's mm-hmm. just a lot to consider.
Mm-hmm. When we talk about the economics of this, Latifa, as the coordinator here for the Story County Mental Health Court in its pilot program here, mm-hmm. is there a savings to the justice system? And where does the money come for this pilot program? When will the savings, if there is any, be realized?
Well, so the savings would come from fewer people in the jail, fewer resources being needed to support those people while they're in the jail. Fewer interactions with law enforcement. Mm-hmm. Our law enforcement and our jail spend a lot of time and energy working with people who have lots of different mental health needs. So there would be a tremendous savings there. There would be a savings for those people who would otherwise go to prison.
Right, right. And Monique, I mean, if we want to look at this in terms of dollars and cents, that's certainly one way to do it. But it seems like the larger issue is here is, do we want to be a society, do we want to be a state where people with mental health problems go to jail, right, instead of having their problems addressed? I mean, if you have a son, daughter, wife, husband with this problem, a family member, you want to be given some help.
You know, Ben, you've really, I think, hit the nail on the head. And I think that is, from my understanding, the impetus of this court and its genesis is that the Story County attorney, the public defender's office, the probation department, the judge, the mental health advocates have all wanting to make sure that they aren't contributing to the really inhumane incarceration of people who have psychiatric disorder or contributing to the criminalization of mental disorder that we know happens. And so really seeing these entities want to take responsibility and ownership for creating the justice system as they want to see it, I think is something to be commended.
Mm-hmm. Now, I understand there are 5 mental health courts in Iowa today. How big could this get? Is this a part of a larger long-term strategy to sort of reimagine, redevelop the court system with specialty courts?
I mean, that would be ideal, wouldn't it? I mean, to really be addressing the needs of the people who are passing through.
If they, one, save money, or I guess, one, are more humane and more appropriate, and two, save money. Yes, right?
Right.
So how are we going to evaluate that in this particular pilot program?
So that is part of where I come in. Part of what I do is I help the jurisdiction decide what its goals are, and then we figure out how do we measure if we're meeting those goals, and if we need to change track, how do we do that? And so that's part of what we do when we come up with the criteria. And the measurement part is really interesting because it is also a really important piece of sustainability. Mm-hmm. And so what you want when you have these courts is you don't want them just to crop up. You want them to crop up. You want them to be based in the evidence. You want them to be successful, but you really want them to be long-standing and ongoing. And you want, if your jurisdiction can, to develop other specialty court models, you know, like you mentioned. So New York is a really good example. They have a variety of specialty courts, drug courts, mental health courts, felony courts, homelessness courts, domestic violence courts. There are many ways to handle certain offender needs within the justice system.
Mm-hmm. Monique, having a sort of a broad view of what's happening across the country with these sort of specialty courts and mental health courts, I imagine you have examples where they are a great success, and that can be seen in the data. But you have others. Are there others that just fail because they roll out wrong, or they do something wrong?
Well, certainly there are examples of both. And one of the things that we know is that smaller jurisdictions, more rural jurisdictions, places where there are fewer resources tend to struggle because the needs are fairly consistent. right? So someone who has untreated schizophrenia looks the same generally in New York as they would look in a very small county in Iowa, but there are many more resources available to that offender in New York than there would be in an Iowa. And so it's really resource-driven and strength-driven based on what happens in the particular jurisdiction. But I don't think anyone starts these programs planning to fail. A lot of the work really needs to happen at the beginning when you have to think through what are we willing to take on, what can we commit to, what are our goals? How are we measuring it? And what is the ultimate plan for sustainability?
Do you come across people, I don't know, you're county-based here, people in the administration, some people who have some power who just say, this is not the way we want to go?
Absolutely.
You do. And what are their chief objections?
I think there is, in many ways, just misunderstanding. I think people think that many offenders who have psychiatric disorder are just faking it, or they worry, honestly, about appearing soft on crime or as though they're making excuses for people. And I think once you sit down and have a conversation that's based in the evidence and the data, people usually will at least be willing to hear more and have an open conversation.
Yeah. What about those? Because undoubtedly there will be people who will say, hey, I can get a different, softer treatment, if you want to call it that, by appearing to have a mental health problem. Is that easy to discern?
Yes, it is.
In a phrase.
Yes, it is. So we have trained mental health professionals who are well aware of what we refer to. So what you're referring to is a phenomenon we call malingering, and they are trained to know when someone is faking it or not. So
100% of the time.
I'm not going to say that. But you know, it is usually not the thing that is the, we know that the people who come into these courts deserve this service, need this service. They're usually well known to everyone in the system. One of the words you will hear refer to these populations is they're high flyers. They're people who are known to the system. They've kind of been in and out. It's not they're usually not unknown to people in the system.
Okay. Very quickly, in just a few seconds, I don't know who wants to take this. Let's cast our eyes a few years into the future. What do you hope this will become? Monique?
So what I hope to see is a court that is very robust and operating in an evidence-based fashion that has really good assessment measures and has a long-term plan for sustainability.
Okay. It sounds like that's a good setup to leave this conversation so that we can check back in with you to see how this Story County Mental Health Court pilot program is working out. Latifa Faisal and Monique Beenken, thank you very much for stepping into our studio.
Thanks, Ben.
Thanks, Ben. Have a good day.
You too. Another reminder, coverage of the State of the Union address on Iowa Public Radio stations this evening starting at 8. You can also listen to audio streaming at iowapublicradio.org. River to River is produced by Emily Woodbury, Caitlin Harrop, and Lindsay Moon. Our executive producer is Catherine Perkins. River to River is a production of Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Join us for Politics Day tomorrow after the State of the Union address.